Good morning, everyone. How you doing today?
Good.
Glad to hear it. Welcome again to Midcurrent. Whether you're on site with us here today or whether you are tuning in online, we are so glad to have you a part of everything happening right now. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here, and really just so thrilled that you'd be here with us today. We are finishing today a message series, a three-week message series called Two Truths and a Lie. And we have been talking about for these 3 weeks all of the reasons why we did and why we did not start Midcurrent Church just 4 years ago. And so before we get to all of that, we are going to play one final round of Two Truths and a Lie like we have for the past weeks before this. We're going to play a quick round of Two Truths and a Lie about me. We just figured we cannot have a message series with this title and not play a round of this game. So one last week, two truths and a lie about me. Here are three statements you're gonna see. You have to decide which is true about me and which is a lie. Number one, I have a bachelor's degree in biblical and theological studies from North Park University in Chicago. Number two, I have a master of divinity from Bethel Seminary in the Twin Cities. Number three, my first experience working in church. I've been in church, you know, working, serving practically my whole adult life. But my very first experience working in church was at the church that my dad pastored in the suburbs of Chicago. Okay? Who thinks, just to raise a hand here, who thinks it's a lie that I have a master, that I have a bachelor's, we'll start there. Who thinks it's a lie that I have a bachelor's degree in biblical and theological studies from North Park University in Chicago? Just a few, all right. Who thinks it's a lie that I have a master of divinity from Bethel Seminary? Okay, who thinks it's a lie that my first job ever was in church that my dad pastored just outside of Chicago? All right. Well, there wasn't a ton of hands that went up, which is actually kind of playing into this quite well for me here this morning, because I have a little confession to make. I tricked you this week. All three of those are actually lies. Okay? I did get a bachelor's degree from North Park University in Chicago, but it was not actually in biblical and theological studies. I do have a master of divinity, but it was not from Bethel Seminary. It was actually from North Park Theological Seminary. And my dad was not even a pastor, so that was just a straight up lie altogether. But it sounded like, yeah, that could be pretty true, huh? And that right there is kind of the point today. All of these were designed to be, this was the intent, they were all designed to be maybe just a little bit harder to determine, right? When you heard each statement about me, I'm guessing each one sounded somewhat convincing, like, yeah, I think that is, or at least maybe that should be true about Sten, right? And some parts were kind of true, but the statement as a whole was actually just not all that accurate. And so here's why I begin that way today. Because I want to take time today to alert you and to alert all of us to the fact that the very same thing can happen sometimes when it comes to what people believe to be true about church or about a church or about a brand new church. Right? Sometimes there are ideas and there are beliefs out there about a church and about what a church should be like and you know what a church should really be all about. And when you hear those ideas or when you think them or when someone expresses them to you, it's easy to think, yeah, that sounds like it is or like it maybe should be true about church. And while there might be, and that's going to be the case with what we talk about today, while there might be some partial truths to those ideas, oftentimes the overall sentiment is not entirely accurate. And so what I want to do today is to try to address some of those common ideas and some of those common misunderstandings today. And there's actually two specifically. I had to kind of whittle down a huge list of them, but there's actually two today that I want to address. So technically, we probably should have called the series Two Truths and Two Lies, but that was not nearly as catchy sounding. So we went with Two Truths and One Lie. But there's two lies, two common misunderstandings that I have encountered over and over again in all of the time that I have spent in church, not only here, but in any place that I have served. And so today I want to try to speak to some of those today. Now, I want to begin with just a very quick disclaimer before we dive into these misunderstandings. Okay? Today is not necessarily a real here at Midcurrent. It's not necessarily going to be a real feel-good message as I break down some maybe understandings and common ideas that people had. It's not going to be feel-good, and I recognize that, and it's actually okay with me, because the truth is, if we are not clear, if I am not clear about what church is really all about right now, then there's definitely going to be a chance that some people don't feel good later when what they thought was true about church doesn't necessarily play out, right? So today might not be a real feel-good moment, but I think there's a greater chance that there's a lot of people that won't feel good later when what they find out or what they realize is true about a church or about this church isn't really what they thought it was. In other words, that they expected something from the church that the church never really promised. I even take time to do this today that might feel kind of awkward or feel weird. Here's why I do this today. It's because I don't want that to happen. I don't want there to be moments when people here don't feel good because of some gap, some distance between what they thought and maybe what was true. I don't want that to happen. I don't want you to walk away from this church or from a church or any church. I don't want you to walk away from God, maybe because church didn't pan out to be something that it was maybe never really totally intended to be in the first place. And so that's why I take the time to do this today. Might not feel good now, but there's a good chance it won't feel good later if we're not clear about what church is really all about. So, who's excited for the next 15 minutes? Everybody? Yeah, good. You're all like, man, why did I come here today? Okay. I, for one, am very glad, very, very, very glad that you came here today, because with every single thing inside of me, I really believe that a community like this, I really believe that a room full of people like this, whose hearts are aligned and whose vision is locked on the very same target, I believe a community that has that type of clarity, I believe that it can be a very powerful and an extremely unstoppable force in God's kingdom. And so I'm praying, and I pray every day that Midcurrent would be that kind of force here in our little sliver of the kingdom. And I really believe that if you are a part of it, if you link arms with us, if your hearts are aligned with us and your vision is locked on the very same target, I really do believe that your life will be full in all of the ways that your heart truly desires. And so with that being said, let me share with you now two lies, if you will. Two lies that might sound really, really nice, but are ultimately not the reasons that influenced our decision to start a brand new church here in the St. Croix Valley 4 years ago. Here's lie number one. All other churches are too big. All other churches are too big. It's a lie. That's actually not one of the reasons why we started Midcurrent Church. And now the reason I talk about this is because this might be the one sentiment that I have heard most. I hear it in various places, in various, Christian circles. But this might be the one sentiment that I've heard most in the last 4 years specific to Midcurrent. Anytime I meet somebody new, I'm always asking, hey, cool, welcome. We're so glad you're here. How did you hear about Midcurrent? How did you, what is it that brought you here today? And whether people have had a past experience in a church of like 500 or maybe 5,000, 1,000 over and over and over and over again, I hear the same thing. Oh, we were going to such and such a church, but it was too big. And we really like it here because we prefer something small. Okay? Now, if you have ever thought that or if you've ever said something like that to me, do not worry. Do not feel bad. Do not be embarrassed. I totally get it. I know there is something genuine and something very honorable in those desires to be a part of a church like that, to feel a sense of belonging somewhere. And we do want that for you. You should feel like you are a part of something here. That is very legit. And that's why these kind of ideas sound so convincing. Like, yeah, that is true. All the other churches out there are too big. Right? It's why we kind of get sucked into believing that. But here's what I want to say today. It might be helpful for everyone to know now that we didn't necessarily plant. That's what they call this idea of starting a brand new church. We didn't necessarily plant Midcurrent to provide a smaller option here in the St. Croix Valley. Okay? It's a very lovely thought. A small, tight-knit, you're just one big, happy family kind of church. It's a very lovely thought, but that was not necessarily our goal, nor do I think that it should be the goal. The goal of the church. And yet, time and time again, I continue to hear this kind of idea. And every time I do hear it, here's what happens inside me. Every time I hear this idea of you know, we really prefer a smaller kind of church, I always get a little bit worried. I get a little anxious inside. Not upset, not mad when I hear this. I get a little bit anxious inside. I get a little bit worried inside about how people's experience will go at Midcurrent, because here's the truth. We are not small by design. Okay? We're not trying to be big. But small was not our goal. Size, in fact, was never really our intention from the beginning. Influence was. Okay? We're actually small because we're only a 4-year-old church that just spent an entire year as an online church, right? We're small because nobody really knows we exist. We're small because we literally started with no one and with nothing. And for a while, the only picture we had on our website was a picture of 30 of us sitting awkwardly around in a living room that scared most people off who probably went to our website. I'm not joining that church. That's weird, man. The other reason why this is concerning to me, the other reason I get anxious inside a little bit when I hear this kind of thing, is because the size of a church, if I'm just being honest, I told you this wasn't necessarily going to be a real feel-good message, but the size of a church, truthfully, if I can just be honest with you, the size of a church, I think, is a really poor way to evaluate and to determine your interest in being a part of a church. The church is, and it should absolutely be, a family where you can belong. And oftentimes it's up to you to create those connections that you desire. But truthfully, that connection, it's never limited by size. So the reality is, whether you are sitting in a church of 30 people or 3,000 people, here's what's true. There is still only one person sitting in front of you. One person sitting behind you, one person sitting to your right, one person sitting to your left, right? There's still only one person standing in front of you in line to get a cup of coffee and one person waiting in line behind you. The number of other people in the room, 2 rows back or 4 rows back or 5 rows back or 10 rows back or 20 rows back, it doesn't affect your ability to connect to the person or to the people that are nearest to you. And beyond that, here's one last, this is just a little bonus thought for you here, right? Beyond that, if size is the main factor that you use to evaluate church, my fear is that you'll always be switching churches. Because most churches, I think, are either growing or they're shrinking, right? And so if you invest into a church solely because of the size when you discovered it, there's a good chance it won't be that same size for long. And so eventually you'll have to go find another church that is the size of your liking. In fact, we're often told many times in the church planting world that people who come into your church at 100 will not like your church when it's 200. And people who became a part of your church at 200 will not like when you become 500, right? If size is the goal, we'll always have to be switching because there's a good chance the church will never be the same size as when you found it. Now, what's the point of this fun little rant here, right? The point is this: with all due respect, size to me is irrelevant. Smaller is not always better, and big is not always bad. And there's actually a fascinating moment in history, fascinating moment recorded in the book of Acts in the New Testament that speaks to the first ever moment of church growth in the history of church, right? The book of Acts was written to record a history of all the work that the apostles did to spread the good news of Jesus and to establish what we call the early church, or the first century church. And there's one little detail recorded in the book of Acts chapter 2 that we cannot let go unnoticed. So look with me then at Acts chapter 2. This is the Apostle Peter. He's preaching to the crowds about Jesus and telling people to turn to Jesus. And here's what is then recorded in verse 41. It says this: "Those who believed what Peter said were baptized and added to the church that day, about 3,000 in all." 3,000 in all added that day. Imagine for just a moment here. Imagine if Peter said, "Ah, folks, okay, that'd be enough for today." Right? This is getting to be a little too much. There's a handful of us who would really prefer something a little more intimate here. So here's what we're going to need to do, folks. We're going to need a couple thousand of you, to not turn to Jesus today. In fact, quick show of hands, we're going to need 2,500 of you to actually not be baptized today. Okay, there's no chance that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. And actually, the growth of the church didn't stop at 3,000. The next few verses talked about the characteristics of that first century or that early church. Talked about how this church worshiped God and how they looked out for one another. And then look at how verse 47 concludes. "And each day, the Lord," what? "The Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved." Each day the Lord added. Now, what does that mean for us? Okay, why talk about big and why talk about small? I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page in understanding that, yes, small sounds nice and warm and fuzzy, but truthfully, size, as I see it, it's irrelevant. Okay, and when it comes to Midcurrent, I want people to know is that we don't have a size goal. We don't have a size goal. We do want you to feel connected here in really powerful ways, but we don't believe that is somehow related to the size of the church, right? We're not intentionally small, nor do we believe that bigger is better. But what we have said from day one is this: that as long as we have friends and neighbors who do not know Jesus, then we are not big enough. We do not have a size goal, I promise you that. We do not have a size goal, but as long as we have friends and family and neighbors and coworkers, people in our sphere of influence every day that do not know Jesus, then we are not big enough. What is big enough? I don't know. I honestly cannot give you an answer to that, nor do I even have a goal in mind. I just know. I just know that I, for one, will never volunteer. Perhaps some of you will raise your hand to volunteer for this. I just know that I, for one, will never volunteer to stand out front and turn people away who are trying to turn to Jesus. We will always work hard to make the church feel smaller, to operate smaller, like we're doing right now with MC Connections and like we're gonna do with small groups coming up in November. We will always work hard to make this church feel as small as it can, but small on the whole is not our goal. Size is really irrelevant. That's lie number one. We did not start Midcurrent Church because all other churches were simply too big. And somewhat related to that is lie number two. And that lie sounds a little bit like this: that the church should be the Christian version of Cheers. You remember the TV show? Okay, about the neighborhood bar named Cheers, right? This bar was the place where everybody knows your name. It's such a lovely thought, isn't it? Man, what an attractive thought to go somewhere where everybody knows your name and where you are right in the center of every single thing that happens. And so when we think about a church being this kind of place, we think, well, yeah, that's exactly what a church should be. And it sounds very attractive, very compelling, if I'm being honest. It sounds compelling to me. This sentiment, although it's never really been referred to in the Cheers kind of terms, it's been around. I think it's around in every church, but it's been around here at Midcurrent since the very beginning. This idea that Midcurrent should be a place where everybody knows everybody and where everyone should spend equal times with everyone and where everyone should be included anytime, anyone, anywhere is getting together that's associated with this church. And why does this sentiment exist? It's because of this attractive sounding idea that A would be the Christian version of Cheers. It sounds so right, and it sounds so true, and truly, if I'm being honest, I almost wish it was true. I mean, some of me and my wife Erica's most favorite and encouraging moments as we step back and evaluate the church, some of our most favorite moments are when we see friendships forming in various places and various pockets within this church. It absolutely warms our hearts, okay? But all of this begs the question, is that what we're called to do? To create a place where everyone knows your name? The question is, did Jesus call us to build the Christian version of Cheers? It sounds nice. But the last time I checked the New Testament, I told you this does not feel good. I'm sorry about that, okay? The last time I checked the New Testament, knowing everyone's name and spending equal amounts of time with everybody that he or that his disciples encountered, it was not a hallmark of the ministry of Jesus. Certainly that wasn't possible for the 3,000 that we just read that were added to the church in one day. Okay? And beyond that, here's how Mark records some of the moments when Jesus' ministry and his leadership and when his influence really started to begin. Here's what Mark writes. He says, then he, this is Jesus, appointed 12 of them, and he called them his apostles, and they were accompanying him, and he would send them out to preach, giving them the authority to cast out demons and all the other things that Jesus empowered them to do. Here's the point. Here's what we got to see. Jesus started his ministry with 12 Jewish fishermen and tax collectors. And he stayed with them, and he ate with them, and he traveled with them, and he taught them. And as time went on, he invited many others to join them and to follow him. And there was women, and there was sick, and there was the lame, and there was the demon-possessed, and there were sinners, and there were Gentiles. And pretty soon, Jesus's following, it included so many new people that they were referred to by one collective name, the crowds. At least 34 times in the New Testament, it refers to the crowds that began to follow Jesus. I can almost guarantee that Jesus nor his disciples knew all of their names. I can almost guarantee you that they didn't know all of their stories, that they didn't, always get to hang out with that whole crew on nights and on weekends. And that did not mean that their work was not sincere. It just means that Jesus' ultimate invitation was for people to come and to follow him. And that, to me, seems to be the behavior of a fruitful and a growing Christian community. Not how much that community resembles the fictional set of a neighborhood bar named Cheers. Now, let me be very, very clear. The church, this church in particular, but any church, the Big C church, it should 1,000,000% be a place where someone knows your name. And it should be a place where you know the name of someone else. We want that to happen here. If that's not happening here, then we're not doing something right. And we would love to know about it, right? That should be the result and the byproduct of your involvement in the life of the church. But is that the goal? Is that the purpose behind all of this? Is that why Erica and I left a very comfortable life behind in order to start Mid-Current Church, to fill the holes in all of the social calendars of everyone across the St. Croix Valley? Despite how right and good and appealing and attractive that might sound, despite the fact that it might feel so true, I'm just not sure that it is. Despite how appealing that might sound, I'm not sure, as much as we or as much as I would even like it to be true, I'm just not sure that it's even realistic or even sustainable if you really think about it. And truthfully, social science would agree. Social scientists would agree. And there's a British anthropologist and psychologist named Robin Dunbar who argues that the maximum number of people that you can have in your life is actually far fewer than you think. And Dunbar would say that this is not a matter of preference, but that it's actually hardwired into human existence. And that these limits, they're actually cognitive, and they're actually a result of the way that the brain works. Here's what he says. He says that the average person is wired for 3 to 5 close relationships, 12 to 15 friendships, and about 150 personal connections. It's not a matter of preference. He says it's cognitive. It's the result of the way that we are hardwired in our brains. 3 to 5 close relationships, 12 to 15 friendships, and about 150 personal connections. That's it. And if we bring this back into the church world, it would actually make sense then. It made sense to me that church experts have long reported that you need about one pastor for every 150 people in the church, because that's the amount of time that one pastor can maintain even kind of a limited amount of personal contact with people, right? It's why the average church in America is 79 people, because there's usually one pastor trying to do everything for everyone. As nice as it sounds, there's gonna come a day when I or my wife or when our staff, right, there's gonna come a day when Brian or Amy or Haley or Aaron, we can't, as much as we would like to, there's gonna come a day when we can't know everyone personally who walks through the door. It's not a matter of preference. It's not a matter of our willingness. It's a matter of reality. And this doesn't feel good, but this is what I was saying. I just want to be clear now. It might not feel good now, but I don't want it to feel worse later if these two worlds collide. The truth is, if you are banking on your church experience being about how close you are to any one person in particular or any one grouping of people in particular, here's the cold, hard truth. Those people are going to let you down. We are going to let you down. I'll get very clear about this. I am going to let you down. I will fail you. There's going to be a time, I promise you, there's going to come a time when as much as I wish I could have, there's going to come a time when I didn't reach out, when I didn't follow up, when I couldn't quite make it, when I wasn't there for you in the way that you wish I was, or even the way that I wish I was. A church where everybody knows your name. It's a really, really, really nice thought, but I'm not sure it's incredibly realistic. I'm not sure it's incredibly biblical, nor as much as we want to make sure that someone knows your name. It's not really been our goal to have a place where everybody knows your name. We do pray, and I'm very sincere about this. This is why I don't want this message today to get I don't want you to get the wires mixed. We do pray. We do long for. We do work hard to make this place feel like a place where you could belong. But rather than promising you that everyone will know your name, it's really just our prayer that someone would know your name and that you would have the opportunity also to see to it that you get to know their name as well. We can't promise you this is going to be a place where everyone will know your name, but we do work really hard to make it a place where someone would know your name and where you would know the name of someone else. Because that's the best way that we move forward together in life. In 3 weeks, on October 17th, we're actually going to celebrate the fourth anniversary of the day that we first opened the doors of Mid-Current Church. And as I think about that and I talk about this today, I can't help but just remind you that the truth is that we did not open those doors 4 years ago. We did not take a risk into the unknown, right? We didn't risk everything when really nothing was guaranteed, right? We didn't open those doors because there was too many big churches out there and that there was a need for something smaller. We didn't open those doors because we saw a community of people who needed to kind of amp up their social and their relational life, and so we decided to step in to be kind of the relational matchmakers. Right, as much as we hope all of those things happen for you, that you do make connections that would make the difference for the long haul, as much as we do hope and pray and work really hard to make this a place where you can belong, Mid-Current was not started to simply be a social club. Now, I do think it would be wise for you to build the social fabric of your life around the people that exist here, because this is one of the finest groups of people I've been associated with. But all that is not necessarily, it's not necessarily why we exist today. We do exist to reach more people for Jesus and to invite people to begin to live more like him. We do exist to train up men and women and the next generation of leaders to meet the needs of the world around us, right? We exist. And this brings us back to week one in our series. We do exist because God lost something and he wants it back. And that something is you. You are the focus of God's mission. And if God has already been successful in his search and rescue mission for you, then your job is to join God in God's mission to seek and to save those who are lost, those who God loves, those who God values and wants to be brought back home again. Christian author Brian McLaren, he puts it somewhat bluntly but very clearly when he talks about the church. Here's what he says. He says, it's not about a church meeting your needs. It's about joining the mission of God's people in meeting the needs of the world. It's not about a church that's meeting your needs. Certainly, we do want to meet the spiritual needs that exist deep down in our souls. Certainly, if there are physical needs that you need to support your family and to continue moving forward in life, we want to know, right? But it just so happens that the one thing that we think is perhaps the greatest need of all for people in the world today is connecting to the heart of God. And so we want to do everything we can to create a place, to create places, and to create opportunities where that might happen, where real people and a real God could meet once again. And that is why we exist. That is the mission that we are on, and we are praying that many, many, many more of you would join us. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for this time to carve out and to come together. And I thank you for a community, God, that is built on trust in one another so that there are moments, God, where we can you know, come together and just have some hard conversations, where we can have some discussions that maybe, feel a little bit challenging, God. So I'm grateful for this community that exists here and for the chance that we can come together to make sure that our hearts are aligned and that our vision is locked on the very same target, God. And I do pray, God, although I just spent 30-some minutes talking about the fact that this may not be the goal, the reason why we opened these doors, God, I pray that everybody here would walk out of here knowing very clearly that we do desire for this to be a place where everybody knows that the doors are open, that they belong, that there's someone here, there are people here that wants to know their name. There's some people here that they might have the opportunity to encourage simply by getting to know their name. God, we want those things to be happening. We pray that you would continue to build up the social fabric in the lives of everybody who goes to this church, God, because we do know that those are the relationships that really do help us go at this for the long haul, God. And so we pray that you would be working in various corners and pockets and places in this church, God, to knit this community together. God, but ultimately, would you lift our eyes and would you open our hearts to the work that you have called us to do? God, we simply want to be people who are following in the footsteps of Jesus, whose ultimate invitation for our friends, for our neighbors, for our coworkers is simply to come. To come and be connected to the heart of a God who loves us so much that he would send his only son to rescue us and to bring us back home again. God, if there's someone here today who may feel as though they right now in this time in their life are the focus of your search and rescue mission, God, because we know that you are out to seek and to save the lost. Not the lost in the messed up, but God, the lost in the sense of those who have value and who have a place where they really belong. God, if there's someone here today who is all of a sudden feeling, you know what, maybe it's me that's lost. Maybe it's me that has been misplaced. Maybe it's me that God is calling and drawing back to him. God, I pray that right now in these moments, their hearts might open. I pray, God, in a sense, their hand might even raise to the invitation that you set out in front of all of us to say yes to your son Jesus and to a relationship with him, God, to say yes to joining you in the mission that you are on in the world around us. God, thanks for this time and thanks for this community, God, who I do know is already and is in the process of becoming even more of a powerful and unstoppable force here in this community and in our sliver of the kingdom, God. Would you help us continue on to join you in the mission that you are on here in this place? And we pray these things in your name. Amen. Thanks so much for being here today. Three things for you before I let you out of here. Number one, if you are in need of prayer, if you perhaps did open your heart and maybe even raise your hand to the invitation that God has made to you, or if there's just anything that you are in need of prayer of, there's gonna be someone off to my right available to pray for you. If you are staying, number two, for MC Connections, grab your kids. And then as soon as lunch is ready, go ahead and begin feeding yourself and your family. And those opportunities will then kick off when this room is ready. And number three, make sure that you set an alarm on your phone right now. Make sure you clear your calendar and plan to be here next Sunday as we kick off a three-week message series and campaign called Raise Them Up. Raise Them Up. I got to get it right here. Where we talk all about God's future for Midcurrent and the plans we are making to move in to a new home of our own. We do not want you to miss a single week of it. So plan to be here October 3rd, October 10th, and October 17th for Raise Them Up. Have a great afternoon, and we will see you next week. God bless you.